I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. Rising sea levels and dangerous amounts of smog were on the minds of environmental activists who waded into Baltimore Harbor last week to push Maryland lawmakers to double down on the state's clean energy goals. A new poll shows that most Marylanders want the same thing and are willing to pay extra to make it happen. Currently, state law demands that at least 20% of the state's electricity be generated from wind, solar, and other renewables by 2022. Abigail Ross Hopper, Maryland's top energy official, talks about where we are in reaching that goal. Also, Josh Tulkin, director of the Maryland Sierra Club, gives us the latest on the group's fight against King Coal. That's next on Midday, after the news from NPR. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us in the second hour of the show today, Midday Politics. Barry Raskovar of Political Maryland and my colleague from The Sun, Aaron Cox, who's been covering the gubernatorial campaign for The Sun, will be here. We'll talk about talk Maryland politics in the second hour of the show. In this hour of the show, we're going to talk about energy and renewable energy. According to a recent survey done by George Mason University, nearly 80% of us Marylanders favor development of more solar energy in the state, and nearly 70% favor offshore and land-based wind energy. And also, according to this poll, people said they were willing to pay more to see these resources developed. Meanwhile, just last week, some environmental activists waded into Baltimore Harbor as part of a demonstration to push state lawmakers to double down on the state's clean energy goals. By the year 2022, the state must generate at least 20% of its energy from renewable sources, such as solar, wind, and other non-fossil fuel sources. That's per state law, passed by the General Assembly a few years ago. A little later in this hour, we'll be joined by Abigail Ross Hopper. Abby Hopper is head of the Maryland Energy Administration and an advisor to Governor O'Malley. She'll be taking our questions and talking about this and giving us an update on how we're doing in terms of meeting those goals I just mentioned. But up front, I just want to take a few minutes here at the top of the show to talk about coal in the state of Maryland, the coal industry. This month, coal activists, environmental activists, scored a victory when a key state advisory group recommended passage of new protections against smog pollution at the state's seven coal-fired power plants. That's how many we have. Josh Tulkin is director of the Sierra Club's Maryland chapter, so we wanted to talk to him about this a bit. Josh, thank you for joining us on Midday today.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, you just heard that poll I mentioned. Before we get into coal for a minute, I'm wondering what you thought about that. It seemed pretty impressive to me and worth mentioning on the air. Nearly 80% of Marylanders favored more solar in the state, 70% want to see more wind turbines.
I think it's very encouraging, and it's something that we've seen on the ground for many years. The people that we talk with on a daily basis understand the real impact that coal-fired power has on their daily lives, whether it's smog on one hand or creating global warming pollution and threatening our coastlines on the other. So we see a real surge in people's interest in solar. We see a lot of excitement, and frankly, if you just drive around a lot of places in the state, you'll see a lot more solar panels going up. I think that, you know, this source of electricity really has arrived.
Josh, let's talk about coal now. 44% of the state's electricity comes from coal-fired plants. I mentioned seven. Is that the operative number? There are seven plants in Maryland, or are there more than that?
That is seven large power plants in Maryland.
Seven large ones. But there are others?
There are some smaller facilities. Sometimes campuses will have a small coal plant that they've used for heat and electricity. But for the most part, those are being switched over to natural gas. So the seven power plants you mentioned are really the most important ones to focus on. They're
okay.
The largest sources of pollution.
At least 44% come from coal-fired plants. Another 40% comes from nuclear. And then we have the rest, natural gas, another 8% for the state's power. And then we'll talk about renewables with Abby Hopper in a few minutes here. So tell me about this, though. Inform our listeners about this. What exactly does this mean? The state advisory group recommended passage of new protections. Mean new technology, state-of-the-art technology at these plants?
Well, what it really comes down to is actually requiring technology that's on almost half of all coal-fired power plants in the country. These are not modern state-of-the-art facilities. Many of these plants were built in the 50s and 60s, and they're operating on very similar technology. Imagine what a car without a catalytic converter would look like. They're putting out a significant amount of soot and smog-forming pollutants, and there's a huge health impact on this. We see that increased amounts of smog cause higher levels of childhood asthma. And in fact, here's another notable statistic. 85% of Marylanders live in counties that are in violation of the Clean Air Act, either in terms of smog or soot or particulate matter. We've almost been in it for so long that we're like the frog in the kettle and we've forgotten to jump out. But the situation is really extreme, and it's taking its toll on Marylanders' health. So the Maryland Department of the Environment was basically required to come up with new regulations to address this epidemic. And as part of the process, they need to get support from various advisory committees. And getting the support of this committee was significant because there's a lot of industry folks, MACO, health officials. So the combination of all of these people giving unanimous support, I think, really demonstrates that people believe that it's no longer acceptable to have these old coal-fired power plants operate when we have the technology to clean them and when it's becoming common everywhere else in the country.
There was a report from a few months ago, the American Lung Association. Of course, the American Lung Association puts out these reports every year. Looking at the country as a whole, said that nearly half of all Americans still live in places where smog or soot pollution makes it dangerous to breathe at times. A couple of those places that they highlighted for heightened smog levels in Maryland, especially in the summer, Harford and Prince George's County were mentioned as among the worst in the country, according to the American Lung Association. And Josh, by the way, you mentioned particulate. So there's particle pollution, and then there's smog or soot or ozone pollution, right?
Well, these are all pretty connected. Smog is most directly related to nitrogen oxides, and soot and particulate matter is most directly related to sulfur and sulfur oxide. So from the standpoint of the Clean Air Act, you're really targeting specific pollutants. But what you have to understand is when you're combusting materials at this high of a temperature, a lot of different dirty stuff comes out. It's one of the big advantages to solar power is you've got no combustion, so there's no question of all the different chemicals. Sun shines and power is produced.
Go back, would you, for a minute? Just go back to this advisory panel and the recommendations that were made there, because our listeners are probably wondering, well, what does that mean? What should we expect from that?
Right. So what does this mean? Right now, out of those seven power plants, only two really have modern pollution controls. That means catalytic converters that are helping to pull out the nitrogen and the smog-forming agents, and scrubbers that help pull out the sulfur and the soot and the particulate matter. This new policy says that every power plant in Maryland needs to install modern pollution controls. They need to do what has become an industry standard and bring that industry standard to Maryland. So what we could see is a significant reduction in the pollution generated in Maryland from these additional plants, and that's going to include two plants in Baltimore, one plant in Anne Arundel County. There's a power plant down in Montgomery County called the Dickerson Power Plant, and for those listening in Prince George's County, the Chalk Point Power Plant in Upper Marlboro, which is another major source of pollution. To be clear, this is not going to solve our pollution problem. Power plants are just one source. We need to be looking at automobiles. We need to be looking at other factories. But the largest bang for the buck are these big point source pollutants, and this is going to make a significant dent in the pollution coming from these power plants.
Josh Tulkin from Sierra Club in Maryland, director of the chapter here. How does Maryland compare to other states around here, Virginia, Pennsylvania, Delaware, can you say?
Absolutely. 8 years ago, when Maryland passed the Healthy Air Act, we took a major leap forward. We actually went ahead of the federal government and ahead of some of our surrounding states. It was a bold decision. They put the health of Marylanders first. But in the last 8 years, we've become somewhat complacent, and many other states moved ahead. So actually, out of the 19 states in the Northeast region, we are actually 16th, so third to last, in terms of installing modern pollution control technology. Many of the states have installed this on 100% of their facilities. So while we did take a big step forward 8 years ago, we've been playing catch-up as many other states have begun to move forward and past Maryland.
Does this go into the legislature again, this meaning these new mandates for air quality from power plants, or are we past that point?
These regulations, like all regulations, require either approval or basically no rejection from a committee called ADLR, the Administrative Electoral Legislative Review Committee. But all regulations pass through them, and generally they don't take any action. There will not be any, this does not require any formal action from the legislature.
Okay.
And we are optimistic that it will get enacted before the legislature, the new 2015 session starts.
Okay. And Josh, in a moment, we're going to be talking more about renewable energy in Maryland. So how do you think Maryland's doing in this regard?
I think we're on the right track, but I think the polls that you just cited and the significant impacts that we're hearing that global warming will bring to Maryland require us to do more. Every year we learn that the threat of global warming is more significant. Every year the price of renewable energy comes down, and I think that it's time for Maryland. We don't want to fall behind again like we did in the last 8 years with the Healthy Air Act. With clean energy, we can't wait 8 years. We've got to recognize this is a moment to act and jump ahead and move ahead again by setting a bold goal. So maybe I'm jumping the gun here, but we believe that it's time for Maryland to double its commitment to renewable energy and send a message that this is the place to come build clean, renewable energy that will help reduce pollution and limit our global warming impact. And we think that will be good for Maryland businesses and good for the economy as well.
The reason we're talking about this, if you need another reason, folks, a recent story in the Washington Post quoting the World Meteorological Organization, that's the United Nations Meteorological Advisory Body, levels of heat-trapping carbon dioxide in the atmosphere rose at a record-shattering pace last year, 2013, a surge that surprised scientists and spurred fears of an accelerated warming of the planet in the decades to come. Concentrations of nearly all the major greenhouse gases reached historic highs, reflecting ever-rising emissions from automobiles and smokestacks, but also, scientists believe, a diminishing ability of the world's oceans and plant life to soak up the excess carbon put into the atmosphere by us, by humans. Again, that's from the United Nations Advisory Panel on the weather, the Meteorological Advisory Board, the World Meteorological Organization. Josh Tulkin, thank you very much for joining us. One last thing before you go. Does the Sierra Club in Maryland make endorsements in the gubernatorial election?
We have. We are strong supporters of Anthony Brown and Ken Ullman because of their policies on clean renewable energy and their commitment to cleaning up the Bay. And in this particular race, we're most concerned to hear from Larry Hogan that he actually questions some of the fundamental science of global warming. So I think this should really be an item of concern for all Marylanders when they go and vote.
Josh, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Josh Tulkin is director of the Sierra Club in Maryland, the Maryland chapter. In a moment, we'll be speaking with Abigail Ross Hopper. Abby Hopper is head of the Maryland Energy Administration. She'll be joining us here on Midday for the remainder of the hour. 410-662-8780 is the phone number if you have a comment or question for our guests coming up. And welcome back to Midday as we talk about renewable energy in Maryland and how we're doing in that regard. And we have Abby Hopper with us today, Abigail Ross Hopper, head of the Maryland Energy Administration and advisor to Governor O'Malley on energy. Nice to have you with us, Abby Hopper.
Thank you for having me.
Let's go over a couple of things that we just heard from Josh Tulkin from the Sierra Club regarding coal-fired power plants in Maryland. your math on the number of plants that we actually have generating power, electricity for the grid, different than the number we got from Josh. So if you want to clear something up, please do.
Sure, sure. No, I appreciate Josh's comments and the advocacy of the Sierra Club. They're an important voice in Maryland's political system and in protecting the environment. But we actually have 13 coal-fired units across the state of Maryland. The Healthy Air Act that was passed in 2006 required state-of-the-art improvements across the state. And so six of our power plants, the ones that are base load that run pretty much all the time and provide the vast majority of the energy that we get from coal across our state, those have been improved. And the state-of-the-art technology has been improved. We have reduced NOx emissions by 75% from 2002.
Nitrous oxide?
Yes, from 2002 levels. SOx emissions, approximately 85% from 2002
Sulfur.
Levels. Yes, thank you. And mercury emissions by almost 90%. So I wouldn't...
At the plants that are running most of the time.
Overall, in the state of Maryland, that's how much the emissions have been reduced. So we have made significant and important progress for our citizens.
You know, he said seven, referring to seven big power plants and then some others, and your number is 13. So you're going by the number of units at these locations that are actually generating, burning coal and generating power.
Correct.
So the numbers... The locations may be the same. It's just the units in total is different.
Exactly.
Right?
Okay. I think that's true. So we have made significant progress, but our Maryland Department of the Environment realized that on those peak days, those where there's the most demand for electricity, so the most, and those coincide with the sort of peak ozone days too, right? Mm-hmm. That there are these smaller units. We call them peaker units that run 15 or 20% of the time.
At peak demand.
Peak demand. That those are emitting these chemicals into the air. And so the regulations that the Maryland Department of the Environment has promulgated and that the advisory board approved and that Josh and Sierra Club are supportive of sort of address those peak demand. And that's an important and critical element that we need to address. But I certainly don't want your listeners to think that the state has been sitting idly by and not regulating our coal plants. We have certainly been doing that and made good progress.
Abby Ross, head of the Maryland Energy Administration, with us for the remainder of this hour. You're welcome to join our conversation about renewables, about where your energy comes from in Maryland, 410-662-8780. We can also take questions by email, midday@wypr.org. is our email address. So is there a plan? I mean, are we going to see any coal-fired power plants actually close down over the next 20 years? Is that possible?
I think that's entirely possible, but I think that has the majority of that has to do with the way the market has changed. The energy markets have changed. As you know and your listeners know, there has been a vast promulgation. There's been lots and lots of natural gas that has been
coming to the market.
Mm-hmm. And so as a result of that, there are, I believe, 2,600 megawatts of natural gas plants being permitted, asking for permits at the Public Service Commission, our utility regulator. That doesn't
say that again, 2,600
megawatts. So that's sort of how we measure electricity. So that's about, I think about five power plants are going through the process to get the right to build in the state of Maryland. They are all fired with natural gas.
So we can see a higher percentage of the state's power coming from natural gas.
I think that's a likely outcome. And then if you give me a 20-year horizon, I would say that's a very likely outcome.
Okay. So more gas coming online. I'm just going to ask you about everything here, okay?
Because
I'm so curious.
I hopefully will be able to answer all your questions.
What about nuclear? There seems to be no plans to expand nuclear power or for Maryland to get any of its electricity from additional nuclear units anywhere, either in the state or out of state.
Right. So as you know, we currently get 40% of our energy from nuclear power in the state. And recently, Calvert Cliffs 1 and 2 had their federal license extended for many decades. So we anticipate that those units will continue generating power for the next 30 or 40 years. There, as you know, there was a effort to build a third nuclear power plant down at Calvert Cliffs. And again, the market changed dramatically. The promulgation, sort of the proliferation of natural gas changed the economics for all energy sources. And I think that the nuclear was one of the three was one of the
So if you're looking at the future, you're seeing more natural gas leading to electricity being used to generate electricity, and less coal or less nuclear. Can we?
I think the market will play out so that I think there will be balance, and I think that's good policy, right, to have balance amongst your energy sources. So I think that some of the federal regulations that are coming from the Environmental Protection Agency that will limit existing power plant emissions may have some impact on some of our smaller, those peaker plants we were talking about. But I think coal will continue to be an important mainstay of our generation, as will natural gas, as will nuclear, as will renewables.
Are you think in general people are getting more hopeful? And people, I mean all kinds of people. I don't mean just Sierra Club and people who spend a lot of time in environmental activism, but, you know, average everyday people, people own businesses, people in the corporate class. Do you think they all see the need to do this, to keep pushing for more renewables, solar, wind, biomass, hydroelectric, however you want, whichever one you choose?
Right.
I mean, what do you hear when you go? I'm sure you go out and speak a lot. You probably appear on panels and
sure.
meet people at breakfasts and dinners and lunches. So what do you hear from people?
I hear two things, Dan. I hear one, that money matters and that the business models have changed so that solar, a long-term solar power purchase agreement is a good deal. You can lock in a competitive rate. You can lock it in for the next 20 years, and you can know with certainty, whether you're a homeowner or a business owner, what your energy cost is going to be for the next 20 years. That frequently leaves, you know, opens up your ability to access capital in a different way. Similarly with energy efficiency, which we haven't talked about much, but that, again, businesses do and residents do energy efficiency upgrades because it saves money, right? And people are very motivated by money. So I would say first and foremost that those business models and how those technologies have advanced is what really motivates people. Secondly, I do think there is an increasing awareness. As you said, all the news that we receive from the experts is that the situation is getting more severe and it's happening more quickly than we had even anticipated a few years ago. We are one of the most vulnerable states to climate change. Much of our economy depends on our Chesapeake Bay, right? And if as the ocean keeps rising and the bay rises and communities are really at risk, I think people have to sort of realize that some of the decisions they make in their personal and business lives will affect that. So I think it's those two things, sort of the economics of it, absolutely, and then a growing awareness about climate change and its impact.
We're going to take a break here, Abby. We'll come back and talk some more. That's very interesting what you say about solar in particular. I want to hear some more about that. And welcome calls from our listeners here. 410-662-8780, again, is the phone number for Midday for live talk here on the Midday Show. Welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodericks here. Our guest is Abigail Ross Hopper. You can call her Abby. Abby Hopper is head of the Maryland Energy Administration. She gave me permission to say that. So where were we? I wanted to go back to something. I was impressed with what you said about solar power. And are you hearing what you described there from, you know, consumers as well as businesses?
Absolutely. Consumers have certainly seen the advantages, but there are many businesses that have also installed solar panels on their roofs. And just to name a few, and I'm sure I'll forget some, but for example, Staples has installed solar panels on the roofs of some of their warehouses. McCormick Spice Company has installed solar panels. Domino's Sugar has installed solar panels. Purdue, down in Salisbury at their headquarters, has installed solar panels.
So you don't notice that when you drive by, but because it's probably up on the roof,
probably,
right?
Probably up on the roof, exactly.
Well, this one I noticed. I'm going to point to a photograph here that's posted on my Facebook page today. This is a solar field at Emmitsburg,
right,
at Mount St. Mary's College. It's a very impressive project there.
It's a very impressive project, and it was built in part because the state of Maryland and the University of Maryland system entered into a 20-year power purchase agreement with the developers of that system. And so the energy from that system is used to fuel your state buildings. And we took advantage of that 20-year fixed price. And so it's very beneficial to the state and its citizens.
So the corporations you mentioned that have installed solar, they like that fixed price.
Absolutely. That's one of the benefits of renewable energy, is because there's no, you know, for solar and wind, there's no volatility in the fuel, right? There's no, you don't have to look to the markets to wonder what sort of global economics is going to do or global sort of politics is going to do. The wind's going to blow and the sun's going to shine.
Let's take a couple of calls on solar energy while Abby Hopper is with us. We're going to talk about wind energy as well here in a moment. George in Centerville. Thanks for calling, George.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
I've had solar energy on my home in Centerville since December 30th. Was installed by Solar City, and the last 5 months I've had no
energy bill,
no charges from the Delmarva Power Company.
That's amazing.
And right now I've got about 4,000 kilowatt hours pushed back on the grid, which is like in the bank. So,
what was your investment in this, George?
Well, Solar City will put systems in at nothing down. You don't have to pay anything. It's a kind of a lease program called a power purchase agreement.
So what do you pay per month?
Well, let me finish what I'm saying here. So they have different ways that you can pay, but what I did, the agreement that I had, was to get my electrical charge for a year, and what I did was I paid up front for my electricity for 20 years, which amounted to about $15,600. So I do not pay Solar City any money at all, and the only thing I have to pay to Delmarva each month is a customer charge of $7.94 and a universal service program charge of 36 cents, which amounts to $8.30 a month.
Okay, George. Well, thank you very much. Abby, are there any incentives left for people in Maryland for installing on their homes?
Sure.
Tax credits or anything like that?
There are federal tax credits that are still in place. And in the state of Maryland, the Maryland Energy Administration does give a rebate to residents that install solar systems, not in the case that George described where you're leasing the roof because there's not that down payment, but if you actually bought a system and installed it, we have a rebate for you.
Do you have any idea what a system costs for the average homeowner? You don't know.
The systems have come down so quickly, honestly, that I would be
The
prices have come down dramatically. Our rebates have gone from $10,000 to $1,000 because that's what the market has required. We used to, you know, and to sort of bridge that gap, it required much, much more subsidy and rebate.
I wanted to ask you about wind power.
Sure.
I know that we have two wind farms in Maryland. They're out in Western Maryland on Backbone Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
There was a proposal for a third one out there somewhere. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. So there was a proposal at the Public Service Commission to build, I believe, a 40-megawatt project. So we have 120 megawatts currently. So this is about
from those two I mentioned.
Yep. So this is another 33% increase, I believe, on Dan's Mountain, and that is proceeding to be developed.
And what about offshore? Of course, the legislature almost delayed this project, the big plan to have an offshore wind farm off of Ocean City, 15 to 20 miles off of Ocean City. So where does all that stand now?
Yeah, well, actually, the legislature passed the Maryland Offshore Wind Energy Act in 2013, and they have not taken any more legislative action. The legislative action they took affected onshore wind in the Eastern Shore. We can talk about that if you want.
Oh, that's right. That's right. They wanted to delay a project because of concerns raised about Patuxent Naval Air Station.
Exactly.
And the governor vetoed that, and we moved on. But anyway, as far as offshore goes, goes back now, what, 3 years, you said?
The bill was passed in 2013, and all systems are go. So on the federal side, the federal government owns that land out there. They leased that land in August to a company called U.S. Wind, an Italian developer who is moving forward with plans to develop Maryland's offshore wind area. On the state side, our Public Service Commission has promulgated the regulations that they had to do, so that's great. And then there's really a lot of interest among the business community. The Business Network for Maryland Offshore Wind is the organizing force around that, and they are doing lots of work with Maryland's business community to allow them to be ready to participate in that space. My agency has done a great deal of work looking at sort of the port infrastructure with the Maryland Port Authority, looking at the city of Ocean, the town of Ocean City, kind of how they may have a play for an operations and maintenance port. So there's work going on across the state, across a huge variety of players. So we continue to move forward on that effort.
Where does the investment come for that project? Is it all private?
So the initial investment is all private. It is most likely will be project finance. So investment bankers will be very involved. There have been, as you know, many, many projects financed that way in Europe. And so having a European developer, I think, will be helpful because there's some experience in Europe with doing these kinds of projects. The bill that the legislature passed provided a revenue certainty to the developer so that when the energy is being produced, the developer will get payments from our ratepayers. But that's not, they have to raise all the capital to build this project on their own.
Let's go back to the beginning of the show where I stated what the goal was in this state by legislative mandate. By 2022, the state must generate at least 20% of its energy from renewable sources. And we've talked about a couple of them, solar, wind, of course, all non-fossil fuel sources. That could be biomass burning. And it could be hydroelectric too. Was that not included?
That is included.
Okay. So, what do you think about that? What year is this? 2014. It's 8 years away. How close are we? How are we doing in terms of getting to that goal?
Sure. I mean, I think we're doing great, and we have a clear path forward on how we'll reach that goal. Currently, we get about 8.2% of our energy that's generated in the state of Maryland comes from renewable resources. That has increased over 50% since 2007. It's the year I happen to know about.
Okay.
but I think we're on a clear path towards meeting it with solar, with wind, with biomass, large hydroelectric sort of phases out of the renewable portfolio standard after 2018. But I think we're going to make it.
Melanie wrote in by email with a question about this. What percentage of the energy is residential solar? Do we know?
What percentage of the energy is residential solar?
Yeah.
So the solar carve out to the RPS. So the solar carve out increases every year. My guess, and this is a guess, is that it's less than 1% currently. And of that, it's about 1/3 big system, 2/3 small systems. And big system, I mean like the one out in Emmitsburg. So about 2/3 are small rooftop systems. So it's a very small percentage of a small percentage. But I told you we give out rebates. I believe we've given out over 8,000 rebates in the last few years to homeowners. So it's certainly something that is taking off.
Rick in Easton is a solar installer calling in to speak with us. Hi, Rick. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
All right.
Hi. We've got a little mom-and-pop solar store, renewable energy store in Easton, and the question I have has to do with the effect that the larger solar farms have on the REC market. As you know, the RECs are basically priced on supply and demand, and the more RECs that are out there being generated, the lower the price goes for...
Excuse me. When you say RECs, are you referring to residential?
No. RECs is an acronym for the word solar renewable energy credits.
Okay, so thank you very much for clearing that up.
You get, when you have a system, you get one credit for every 1,000 kilowatt hours that you generate per year. And the value of the RECs when they're sold on the market, an auction, is a valuable part of the payback formula for the average citizen having a solar system. When there are large farms that go come online, they're not necessarily benefiting the individuals that are striving to put solar on their roof, and they drive down the price of the RECs, which are important for their payback formula. So I wanted to ask, I think it was Abigail?
Yes.
Abigail, what can you do to make sure that the REC market stays healthy so that the paybacks on these systems stays in the 5-year range?
Thank you, Rick, for that question. That is something that we have kept a very careful eye on at the Maryland Energy Administration, and I understand the issue. I can tell you two things that we have done. One is we were talking about the solar farm that the state of Maryland is a buyer from, and we get the SRECs from that project. We have agreed to hold we use what we need for our own compliance, and we hold the rest of them as a buyer of last resort, so that if the SREC price gets too much.
I'm sorry, what is SREC? I don't.
Oh, so the solar renewable energy credits.
Okay.
SRECs.
Okay.
So if those get very expensive, we would offer ours into the marketplace, but we have agreed to hold them back so that we don't dilute the market, which is what Rick is talking about.
Mm-hmm.
On the second thing we have done, when Exelon and Constellation merged a few years ago, you may recall, there was a fairly comprehensive settlement agreement. One of those commitments that Exelon made was to build 30 megawatts of solar in the state of Maryland. And we made an agreement about how they would use their solar renewable energy credits in the marketplace to, again, avoid flooding the market and creating sort of a boom and bust cycle in that marketplace. So we're always open to good ideas, Rick, but that we are definitely have our eye on that issue.
You have your eye on that because for people who want to install their own system and get the credits, you don't want this to be all diluted and the credits to lose their value.
Exactly.
Right?
It's balanced.
I understand it's balanced, yeah. But also encourages people to do it.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
So it sounds like we should expect more natural gas generating electric power,
mm-hmm.
maybe someday less coal than we have today. Nuclear seems to be about where it is mm-hmm. for the time being, but we are going to see more wind. We are going to see wind developed more in Maryland.
I believe so, both onshore and offshore.
Yeah, on the last point there, Abby, that Eastern Shore farmer made a reference to, is that going to happen, that onshore Eastern Shore farm?
You know, you would have to ask them. I don't believe they have filed for their certificate of public convenience and necessity at the Public Service Commission just yet.
Okay, because that would be the next step.
That's the next step.
So there's that possibility offshore, of course, mm-hmm. and then another farm in Western Maryland bringing three to Western Maryland.
Correct. But we think there's still more opportunity across the state.
Well, thanks for being with us and offering this update today.
Sure, it's my pleasure.
Abigail Ross Hopper. Abby Hopper, nice to have you with us, the head of the Maryland Energy Administration here in the state of Maryland.